This is Everyday Wellness, Episode 16, Mold Awareness and Strategies for Remediation with Brian Carroll. I'm Dr. Kelly Donahue, clinical health psychologist, here with my co-host, Cynthia Thurlow, functional nutritionist and nurse practitioner. Let's get started. Welcome to Everyday Wellness. Wellness is the result of the decisions that you make every day. It's your mindset and the thoughts you believe. Wellness is the food you put in your body and the relationship you have with yourself and others. Wellness is your work and meaning. Join us on Everyday Wellness as we explore ways that you can choose wellness today.
Good morning. We are here with Everyday Wellness, and today we have a really special guest. This is Brian Carroll from Summit Integrative Wellness, and we wanted to bring him on to really talk about mold and mold awareness, which is something I didn't know as much about as I do now. So technically, he's a nutritional movement therapist who helps the outdoor community to reduce injuries and improve their health so they can get back to exploring nature. I love that. His big health crisis came from mold exposures, taught him the importance of finding the root cause to illness so that he could take back control of his life. He's also the host of the Summit for Wellness podcast, which I've been a part of, and it was a complete pleasure. Welcome, Brian. We're so grateful to have you here this morning.
Thank you both so much for having me.
So, Brian, let's just dive right in. We've read a little bit about you, and Cynthia has been on your podcast and knows a little bit of your background, but can you please tell us how you got interested in this and how your diagnosis was kind of a pivotal point in your life?
So if we go back a little ways, I started out in the movement field, and when you're working with people and you see people that you're doing everything by protocols and they should be getting better and better, but they're not, then it gets really kind of discerning because you're sitting there trying to figure out what the heck's going on. And then I had one of my mentors approach me and say that, you know, there's a lot more to the body than just a physical. And being in the movement world, all I saw was the physical. And so he had mentioned to me that you need to start looking at the body from the inside out. And there's a lot more going on the inside that could be causing inflammation. So that's what led me more into the nutritional world and learning a lot more about how the body functions and more about root causes of illnesses. And as I'm going down this path of education, it was during that time that I started to get sick myself, which I had never really had any big health crises before. And so when it was coming on, it presented very similar symptoms as to strep throat, which is something I used to always get as a kid. And so at first I just thought it was just strep throat. So I kind of just did the normal routine for that. I went to the doctor, they tested, they gave me some medication, and then I went home. And after a few days, there was no change. I continued to get sick. It actually got to the point where my throat was starting to completely close up, and it was very difficult to even drink water. And so I ended up going back to the doctor, and they're like, maybe it's mono. They tested for mono, it didn't come back positive. And then it turned into just a spiral down of health issues. All of a sudden, I just lost all my energy. Every day I would wake up and I would be, the first thing I would do is look at the clock and see how many hours it would be until I could go back to bed. Everything in my body was just stiffening up so much that I couldn't even turn my head to look while I was driving down the freeway. I had a lot of headaches, I had a lot of brain fog, and no one could figure out what the heck was going on. And then after about 12 weeks, which I'm a very outdoorsy person, I do a lot of physical activity, and about 3 weeks in, I couldn't even go and exercise. I stopped going outside. I just didn't have the energy for any of it. So after about 12 weeks, I saw someone in Seattle, and they they just randomly were like, maybe I have mold exposure. I'm like, you know, thinking about it, oh, I don't think so. But they said, since you've tried everything already, let's just test or try some supplements out for mold and see if that might be the problem. So he gave me some supplements. I went home, and within a week, I was about 85% better. All of a sudden, like, my brain fog cleared up. I had energy. My throat cleared up. I started going back outside, which was, like, the one thing I was looking forward to, because once you take something that you absolutely love away from you, then it kind of makes life kind of dull. And so for a while there, I was thinking maybe they just got lucky. Maybe I was towards the end of the illness and it was already clearing up. But then I was looking at a house that right when you walked in, you could tell that it was super musty and moldy smelling. And within about 5 minutes there, most of the symptoms came back. I had to get out. And the next week, I was back to square one.
Wow.
And so that's when I started realizing that maybe it really is mold. So I went right back on the same protocol because I'm like, it worked last time. So let's get my health back to where I can start working on other things with it. And then, of course, two trials of mold exposure wasn't enough. And I ended up going into a moldy barn and I got hit again in the same process. So that's kind of my story with mold. And then that led me into a lot more education about mold and how much it can impact people's health and how many people out there don't even know that they might be exposed to mold within their homes. And that could be one of the causes for some of their health symptoms.
It's really interesting that you responded so quickly and positively. You know, I guess it's been my experience, not so much with my clinical practice, but with family and friends that have been impacted by mold, is that it's been so insidious that it's been, you know, this slowly evolving process. And I wonder for you, because of how physically active you are and your, you know, very, you know, very active lifestyle outside, if that was what kind of clued you in that something really was amiss. Whereas I think a lot of other people are very disconnected from their bodies. I wonder how much of that contributed to you getting diagnosed early and get treated early.
Yeah, it very well could be. All I know is it was also a very stressful time. So at that point, I could have had a lot of my immune system just turned off. And then being exposed to mold, then it could have just tanked my system. That could have been part of it too.
So when you're thinking about mold, I mean, I think all of us kind of know what mold is. Like, it's stuff that grows on your cheese in your refrigerator if it stays there too long. But can you kind of help us to understand what pathologic mold is and kind of why it affects some more than others?
So when we take a look at mold, mold is fungus and fungus is mold. There's slight differences, but we don't need to get down to the molecular level about that. But mold and fungus is found pretty much anywhere. If you walk outside, there's going to be mold and fungus directly, you know, on the trees or on the ground. And when it's out in nature, it's competing with everything else that's out in nature for the same plot of land. So one type of mold can be competing against different bacteria, other types of mold, different fungi, all sorts of stuff for that one plot of land. So it becomes kind of a war, and it's this back and forth war, and it's such a wide open space. So that's why if you're out walking through the woods or something and you see mold on trees, a lot of times you don't really get sick from that. However, when you live in an enclosed space, then what happens is everything is competing for that space, and then once something starts winning that battle, there's no way for other bacteria or other molds or fungi to come in and fight back. So once one type of mold starts to take over a region of the house, then it starts to proliferate very quickly and it grows very quickly. So that is one of the reasons why we get a lot of mold exposure from homes, is because instead of having thousands, if not millions, of different species all competing for space in a very wide open environment, it's a couple species that are competing against each other in an enclosed space where you are then breathing all of the mycotoxins that's coming off of these spores and the mold. So if we're looking at the body itself, you hear a lot about the microbiome, which is the bacteria within the gut, but we also have the mycobiome, which is the fungi and the mold that's in the body. And when you're looking at the readings of these microbiome, a lot of them actually are similar to the toxic molds that we see in the households. They're just on very low levels, because within the body you want to have a nice colony of different bacteria and different fungi and molds. But if you're constantly breathing in the same type of mold, then that's going to create a lot more issues within your body.
And that makes sense. You know, the good old mycobiome or the microbiome are things that, you know, listeners may not be as familiarized with. But, you know, it comes down to, on a molecular, cellular level, how important it is having balance in our bodies. That's really, you know, the takeaway message for everyone to really understand and process. What's interesting, Brian, is when I was kind of doing some research in preparation for our call, something that really I found staggering, and you, again, because this is something you're more familiarized with, you may be more aware of, you know, some of the changes that have occurred just with building in the last, you know, 40 plus years, and how there's less breathability with a lot of the materials that are being used to you know, build homes, especially here on the East Coast, where there's always so much development that's ongoing. Have you found, you know, with the people that you're working with, are they finding that when they're purchasing new homes, are they testing for mold? Is this something that people are concerned about? Or do you still feel like this is really just so new that most people, it's not even on their radar?
So most of the time, people aren't testing for mold. Inspectors might do some tests for mold, but they'll do air samples instead of dust samples, which doesn't really test. Well, those tests don't really come back with very much mold in the actual air. A lot of times the spore is heavy, so you need to be testing the dust that's laying around the house. But like you said, with the changes in the way houses are constructed, the houses don't breathe as well. So kind of like what I was talking about before, now you're enclosing the space even more so that other colonies can't come in and compete for the space. So with more breathable spaces, then you're able to get more colonies to come in and fight for territory. But one of the other issues that I think is probably an even bigger issue is I live here in Washington, where it rains like 250 plus days a year, yet we build houses all year long. So it takes, if something gets wet, it takes less than 24 hours for mold to start growing on that material. And the houses here, they're just constantly getting soaked by rain as they are being built. And I highly doubt that the contractors are going in and completely drying everything out every single day so that mold does not grow on them. And yes, they can be using materials that are mold resistant, but even mold resistant materials still grow mold. So
weight gain is one of many symptoms that our hormones are in decline, especially as we navigate perimenopause into menopause. Dr. Anna, who is a great friend of mine, is an OBGYN who's treated thousands of women just like you and I who experience increasing dryness and even pain in the bedroom as they get older. Jolva is the solution Dr. Anna formulated for her own clients, and it has since been loved by over 100,000 women. It's a feminine cream with DHEA that helps the body regenerate moisture from the inside out. 92.8% of Jolva users experienced a significant improvement in the first 4 to 8 weeks. Get 10% off your first purchase of Jolva by using the link dranna.com/Cynthia. That's dranna.com/Cynthia, and get 10% off your first purchase. I've been using Mitapure for the last 2 years, and I've added this to my routine for multiple reasons. Number one, it's a foundational supplement for me and my family. It keeps things simple, and I know that I cannot get enough of urolithin A in my food to derive the same benefits. And if you're not familiarized with urolithin A, it's a signaling molecule, but it's also actively involved in anti-aging, energy production. And I take Timeline because of its remarkable healthy aging solution that activates key critical cellular pathways in my body. It's a total game changer for healthy aging. I alternate between using the soft gels and powder, depending on whether or not I'm traveling. And we know that restoring cellular energy is a key to enduring health. And this is concluded in a recent publication in Nature Metabolism, which is a top scientific journal, identifying that newly energized cells may provide many more years of healthy life to people. Yet as we age, we know that cellular energy production naturally declines and reduces our prospects of optimal health and longevity. That's the great thing about Timeline, is you can restore cellular energy and support healthy aging. I've noticed the biggest improvements in my energy and sleep levels. We know that Timeline is clinically shown to give our cellular energy generators, the mitochondria, new power. And when taken daily, it replaces aging mitochondria, so it upregulates mitophagy and rebuilds new ones, or mitogenesis. Timeline is the only nutrient that can do what it does. So Timeline renews your cells to a more powerful state. My listeners can get 10% off your first order at timeline.com/Cynthia. That's 10% off at timeline.com/Cynthia. I know you're going to love this product.
By knowing that alone, that all these houses, all these hotels here too, are just absolutely soaked while they're being built, I would be very worried about the health of the houses in general in these types of areas. Now, that is Washington. Washington, we all know, rains a lot. However, if we look at a place like Florida, which has extremely high humidity, that means the materials there are still going to get wet just from the humidity. So humidity also is a factor in the growth of mold within homes as well.
Yeah, I think I was reading that it was when the humidity goes over 60%, which, you know, for most of the East Coast is a good portion of the year, that's really when we should be making efforts to dehumidify the air. I mean, this kind of made my husband laugh because we had actually had a flood in our basement. We bought this house 3 years ago. This will be interesting to share with the viewers. 3 years ago, we bought a house, and it's very common in Northern Virginia for everyone to have three floors of hardwoods. That's very common, including the basement, and which is unusual to us that anyone would want to put hardwoods in a basement. And I said to my husband when we bought this house, I said, "Oh, this will be fine unless we have a flood." Well, then we had a flood. And so we ripped out all of the hardwoods and put in, it's an engineered product. So if it were to get wet, it's something that we can easily pull up and we don't have to deal with carpet and all of that. But I remember when they came out, and this is in January, and I tried to tell the insurance company, "I want a mold test." They said, "Oh, it's too cold for mold." And my husband was like, "You don't understand my wife." I made them test. Because I was just convinced that, I didn't want to be one of those people who 5 years later had some mystery illness that they couldn't figure out. But I agree with you. It's definitely a challenge. And Kelly, I'm not sure, you live in a very historic area. Is that on people's radars in terms of testing, or is that still pretty new?
You know, I think it's still pretty new, although I will say with all of the rain that we've had here recently, there's been kind of an influx of flooding. And I know just from the community forums that I'm on, there's definitely been some talk about mold. And, you know, some of the pictures people have posted clearly shows that mold is an issue, but I'm not sure what steps are being taken to remediate those issues, or if people are tying the mold that they see to their physical, mental symptoms. So, Brian, you mentioned some of the symptoms that you faced, but could you talk about the most common symptoms of mold exposure and toxicity that you see in your practice?
Yeah, of course. And let me step back just a little bit. Cynthia had mentioned that mold grows in humidity over 60%. It's actually about 50%. So
that's a good distinction.
Yeah, it doesn't take a whole lot of humidity for mold to grow. And we use a dehumidifier, and we try to keep our place around 40%. Okay. And it's helped quite a bit. But symptoms of mold. So this is definitely an interesting one, because I'll just list off some symptoms, and then I'll ask you guys what those symptoms also sound like. So some symptoms could be fatigue, weakness, muscle cramps, aches, headaches, light sensitivity, blurred vision, a lot of sinus issues, especially respiratory issues because you're breathing it in, coughing, shortness of breath as well. People can fluctuate between diarrhea and constipation. Typically, we see more diarrhea, but it depends on the person. And then a lot of memory issues and focus issues as well. And then a lot of times, actually, we see an increase in urination because of the body trying to excrete toxins. So by just those symptoms, what else does that sound like? And if you don't know, I would say that sounds like a ton of different illnesses out there. Right.
Well, it's very hard to pinpoint. I know that I work with several of the functional medicine practices locally, and mold is almost always on their minds. But I think, you know, traditional Western medicine, not so much. So, you know, certainly helpful to be, you know, keeping it as part of, we used to call it a differential diagnosis, thinking of something that it could be if nothing else is improving. I know there are vision tests that a lot of the functional medicine doctors will use with their patients when they come in. Initially just to use as a screening tool, and they tell me all the time that they're not at all surprised they're seeing as much mold as they are, that it's far more problematic than people realize. And something that certainly, you know, for, you know, my own clients that I work with, if we can't figure anything else out, I always tell them we need to test your house for mold. It needs to be tested just to make sure that's not, you know, contributing to your symptoms. But you're right. When you have all of those symptoms, it's very hard to differentiate, like, where is this coming from? You just have to diligently work through them.
Yeah, and there's a lot of similarities between mold symptoms and Lyme, Bartonella, and Epstein-Barr. So it's very difficult to know which route to go down, because is it mold? Is it Lyme? Who knows? Have you ever been bit by a tick? Who knows? So that's where we can go into a lot of testing and try to figure out, kind of like what you're talking about, vision testing and doing mold-specific testing as well.
So it sounds like there are ways to test individuals and ways to test the home. Can you talk a little bit more about the different tests that are available?
So if we talk about the home, then one of the great tests that you can do is called the ERMI test, and that is testing for the different dusts in the house. If you have a multi-layer house or a multi-story, then it's best to take samplings from different regions of the house so that you get a better idea of the health of the house. And then there's also what's called the Hertzsme test, which is also done to see if the house is healthy enough for occupancy. So those are kind of the two tests to do for your living space. And then some of the tests for yourself, you have the visual contrast sensitivity test, which is what Cynthia was talking about, which you can do online too. It's like $15. It's pretty inexpensive. So that can give you a good generalized indication of which direction to go, whether it's mold or other biotoxin issues. There's also a biotoxin questionnaires that you can do online to once again just kind of narrow things down a little bit. But then you can run or find a practitioner to run for you a mycotox profile. Great Plains has a really good test for that. They test for like 11 different mycotoxins, and then I think it's 40 different species of mold within your body. So that's a really good test. And then you can do some standardized tests like organic acids tests, which you can also get from Great Plains, to test the organic acids in your urine. And then some people like to do genetic testing for HLA, DR testing, to see if people have the genetics to be able to fight off biotoxins. there's about 25% of the population that does not have that gene. And so those people are a lot more susceptible to mycotoxin exposure. That's why you can have a household of, let's say, five people and one person is really sick from the mold in the house, then that would be an indication that they might have a genetic disposition there and not having the genes to be able to fight off those biotoxins. Now, the genetic test isn't foolproof because I came back and I have the genes to fight off biotoxins and I still got sick. So it definitely is a good indicator, but it's not a foolproof test.
That's good to know. And so the two tests that you mentioned for the home, are those tests that people can just order themselves?
Yes, you can order those tests, or you can have someone else come out and do the testing for you, but you can go on, like online and order them. And I think it's, I'm trying to remember the name. Is it, Mycometrics, I think, has really good testing for the ERMI test. So not every lab is the same. You get some labs that test the ERMI test really well, like they have really good feedback from it, and then other labs don't have as sensitive of testing for the ERMI results as other labs. So Mycometrics is a really good one to go through.
Cool. And so, you know, we want to get rid of the mold that's there, obviously. And you mentioned a couple of instances to include building and really damp conditions that could start this mold issue. But are there any other sources of water in the home, mold in the home, that we might not be aware of?
Well, there's definitely, like, if you ever had a burst pipe, then that can cause a ton of issues in the house. But even something as simple as, you know, a child carrying a glass of water and spilling it on the carpet, that can, and if that's not dried up right away, then that can cause mold to start growing in the carpet. And mold loves cloth. So any kind of fabric, mold just goes to town on. So if there is mold in a household, then you want to make sure that you remove any cloth items or fabric items within that area where the mold is, because it gets deep into the fibers of the fabrics. So whether it's clothes, whether it's upholstery, whatever it is, you want to make sure you completely get rid of all that. Other issues, if you have a leaky roof, that can cause issues. You want to check a lot around, like, the windowsills, window frames, because water can get in through the edges there. Yeah, I think that's pretty good on that. I mean, anytime you have any kind of water spill, you definitely want to dry that up as quickly as possible.
You know, it's interesting. I have a very good friend who actually had to leave her entire home. I guess the mold had so infiltrated, the spores were in everything. They had to leave all their clothing, their children's toys. It was really just profoundly sad. They had to completely start over. So I think, you know, the one thing that I found kind of profoundly overwhelming about it was that, you know, when those spores kind of detach and get in the air and, you know, get into fibers, that it's not as if you can clean them per se. Sometimes things actually have to be thrown away or destroyed, which is, you know, it adds another layer of complexity to mold infestation if it's in your home.
Yeah, it makes it a very expensive process too. And if the house is too far gone, a lot of times it's better to, just like you said, move to somewhere else and start over. Mm-hmm. I know it's expensive, but it's, I'd rather have my health than to be sick all the time.
Yeah. Well, and I'm sure you probably remember how poorly you felt, you know, before you were treated. So, you know, on that kind of, you know, kind of cusping off of that question, you know, what are some common ways that we can actually address mold infestation with supplements? You know, what are some of the key things that, you know, our listeners should be thinking about if they're working with someone? I know that, you know, immunity support is obviously huge, mitochondrial support, which are the powerhouses of our cells. What are some of the key ways that we can address that?
Yeah, so the mycotoxins themselves stimulate a very inflammatory response in your body. So one of the number one things I like to have people do is take on an anti-inflammatory diet, because mm-hmm. your body's already flared up from the mycotoxins, so we want to reduce the amount of inflammatory foods that you're eating so that we're trying to help out the immune system there. And then you also want to avoid foods that are made from mold, yeast, or fungus, or is a mold, yeast, or fungus. So that's stuff like alcohol or mushrooms or even cheeses. And then high sugar foods, mold loves to feed on sugar. And so you want to remove any high sugar foods as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then vinegar-containing foods as well. So any type of fermented foods, you want to remove that.
Okay.
And then grains, a lot of grains and a lot of nuts and seeds are just contaminated with mold before they even get to you. So it's best just to pull those from the diet for the meantime. Mm-hmm. And then you can try to introduce those later. And then another big one that most people, they will fight you to take it out of their diet because they won't want to, is coffee. And coffee beans are typically very moldy. So, and people like their coffee. So that's one of those things that you definitely want to remove from there.
And that makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's interesting. I was listening to a podcast that Dave Asprey was the Bulletproof Coffee guy. And I had not being a coffee drinker, let me just admit that up front. I didn't realize how much, you might be the only other person I've ever met other than my husband. You know, it's interesting. I didn't realize how big of a problem mold is for coffee beans. And he was, of course, trying to get people to buy his product, which may very well be excellent quality, but I don't know because I don't drink coffee. But I had no idea. It was not even on my radar. A lot of those other things make sense to me. I'm not sure if they do to you as well, Kelly, but I was surprised about the coffee. I was like, wow, didn't know that.
Yeah, and living here in Washington, a lot of people give me a lot of weird looks for not liking coffee because this is where Starbucks came from. So.
I think you're better off. It's like one less addiction. I mean, I guess working in the healthcare industry for so many years, how I managed to work nights as an ER nurse and then later as a nurse practitioner working nights, how I managed to get through an entire night without coffee is people were always like stunned. And I'm like, well, I don't even drink. I'm not even a soda drinker. It's just my own body doing it without a stimulant. And then, you know, I was reading that things like infrared saunas, making sure, you know, you're getting good quality sleep are super beneficial. And then I'd love for you to touch on, if you do use this in your practice, the things like liposomal vitamin C or glutathione, or using those to help support your clients when they're kind of coming back from a mold issue.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Nutrisense. It combines cutting-edge technology and human expertise so you can see how your body responds to different types of nutrition, stress, exercise, sleep, and where you are in your menstrual cycle in real time. And by pairing a continuous glucose monitor with their app and expert nutritional guidance, Nutrisense can help you reach your health goals. And the best part is it's not just a program where they send you the CGM and you have to figure it out on your own. Each subscription plan includes 1 month of free expert nutritionist support. Your nutritionist will work with you one-on-one, interpreting your data and providing customized advice to help you reach your health goals. The last time I had my CGM on, my registered dietitian and I troubleshooted over some specific concerns that I had. And whether you're aiming to lose weight, stabilize your energy, or just feel better overall, Nutrisense offers the guidance and support you need. And lasting sustainable change takes time and can be achieved through a longer-term subscription. That's why I encourage my patients and clients to consider 3, 6, or 12-month subscriptions, where it's actually less expensive and allows you to not only achieve your goals, but also to ensure that you stick to your healthy lifestyle for the long term. As I've mentioned before, I have found the CGMs I've used through Nutrisense to be incredibly insightful, specifically to carbohydrate tolerance. I would not have known that plantains spiked my blood sugar without this information. It's also been hugely helpful for tailoring to workouts and sleep quality. And so for me, even though I am metabolically healthy, I find the insights to be particularly helpful to tailor my lifestyle changes to my blood sugar. Visit nutrisense.io/EWP and use the code EWP for $30 off plus 1 month of free nutritionist support. Be sure to let them know you're a listener of the Everyday Wellness podcast when they ask you how you heard about them. This is one of my favorite ways to take care of my health and one of my top recommendations for all of my patients and clients. Have you guys heard about a bioactive whole food on the market with 5,000 published research studies backing it? When my oldest son needed to go on antibiotics a few months ago, I discovered Armour colostrum, and the benefits for him and his recovery from being on antibiotics have been instrumental in me now recommending this to my dairy non-sensitive patients and clients. Armour's colostrum strengthens immunity, ignites metabolism, fortifies gut health, promotes hair growth and skin radiance, and powers fitness, performance, and recovery. My son has mentioned to me over and over again how great his gut feels, how he has improved his digestion and gut function as well. Colostrum is a rich, exclusive source of immunoglobulins or antibodies that optimize our immune defense even during cold and flu season. And we know that mucosal barriers house over 80% of our body's immune cells, including the antibodies IgG and SIgA. And these immunoglobulins bind and intercept harmful particles like viruses, bacteria, and toxins, blocking them from crossing into the barriers into our bloodstream. And Armour's colostrum contains the highest levels of SIgA and IgG to ensure your most fortified first line of protection. It's sustainably sourced, and it's important to know that you want to mix colostrum only with cold liquids or foods, or dry scoop it into your mouth. This is also great for the oral microbiome. And we've worked out a special offer for my Everyday Wellness community where you can receive 15% off your first order. Go to tryarmra.com/Cynthia15 or enter Cynthia15 to get 15% off your first order. That's tryarmra.com/Cynthia15. You definitely want to check it out.
Yeah, so if someone has been exposed to mold, then it creates a big toxic load on the entire system, which is why a lot of times urination increases, because the liver gets so overwhelmed and the detox pathways get so overwhelmed that your body is trying to excrete it through the urine, these toxins. So before you even try to detox, you want to make sure that the gut is healthy, because a lot of people have compromised guts. So make sure the gut is healthy enough to be able to start moving toxins through the gut and out through your fecal matter. And then, like you were mentioning, you want to start working on phase one and phase two of detox. So you really want to work on supporting the liver, especially glutathione. So high doses of glutathione can definitely help to get things moving out of the system. And then a lot of times I like to use a binder, whether it's bentonite clay or zeolite or something along those lines, to be able to bind to these toxins and remove them as well. And then some other nutrients that you want to make sure that you get pretty high dosing of is vitamins A, E, and C. And then you can add in some NAC as well, just to help with the mitigation of the oxidative stress. And then phosphatidylcholine. I actually had a guest on my podcast that was talking about PC for mold and how Europe uses it a ton over there, because it just helps to pull the biotoxins out of the cells. They use really high dosing of PC. She was talking about 1 gram of PC per pound of body weight, which is extremely expensive and probably not going to happen just because of the cost of that. But that just shows like how powerful PC can be. And as far as we know currently, there is no side effects of having too much PC in the body. And PC, phosphatidylcholine, also is really good for inflammatory conditions in general. And very good for liver and gallbladder issues and in the prevention of gallstones and kidney issues. So all of those are all parts of the body that get impacted by mold exposure. And then on top of all of that, you want to make sure that you're producing adequate bile, because that's where the toxins are going to be coming out through into your GI tract. So making sure that you're getting lots of magnesium, sodium as well, and then choline and taurine would be really good for that as well.
Now, are you doing food-based substance? Are you using food-based supplements, or are you focusing purely on just pharmaceutical-grade supplements? I'm asking out of curiosity because I know working with clients, sometimes we've got these long, complicated protocols that I'm working off of for them, and I feel like they almost get supplement fatigue. Although, obviously, if someone's got mold toxicity, they've got a lot going on, they're going to need quite a few supplements. Do you get a lot of pushback from your clients, or are they just so anxious to feel better they don't care?
Yeah, it definitely depends on people's pocketbooks, because if you're throwing a ton of stuff at them and very high dosing, then it can get really expensive. Mm-hmm. But some of the stuff like glutathione, PC, and some other things we definitely do in supplemental form, because we can get more via supplements than we can just through food. We can try to supply people with enough vitamins A, E, and C through food, but I still think that it would be better to supplement. And then we also use a formula called Fungon to help break down mold toxicity in the body, or molds that's in the body as well. So that is one of those supplements that's extremely powerful, and you're not going to be able to get a powerful formula like that just in herbal form. So it's definitely a mix, and you kind of have to read what people can handle, because a lot of times if people are going through this, then they're spending a lot of money on remediation of their household. They could be even having to buy a new house. Some people have had to get rid of everything in their entire household. So it's definitely a very expensive process for a lot of people.
It sounds as if you had a near immediate response when you started taking some supplements and making changes. And I know everyone is different based on their own kind of detox pathways and level of exposure, but is there sort of like a general guideline as to when people can expect to start feeling better once they do a lot of these lifestyle and supplement additions?
Yeah, I think it's definitely depends. I think I got extremely lucky that I was able to bounce back that quickly. But that last 15%, 10-15% or so took a long time to get back in my health. Whereas some people, it takes a long time to get through the initial stages of recovery, and then that final section is a lot easier to get through. So it just depends on people's exposure. It depends on how their body detoxes. If their body detoxes really well, if they have good methylation pathways or not, their genes, their genetics plays a big factor in being able to detox properly. So it definitely depends. Some people, it can be a couple months and they feel really great. A lot of people, it's a year plus.
Wow. Well, I know personally, I've definitely learned a lot about mold from your time here today. If you kind of could boil things down and give our listeners two things that they could do from your perspective to increase their wellness every day, what would those two things be?
To increase your wellness, number one would be to start removing very inflammatory foods in your diet. And for everybody, what causes inflammation is going to be different, but some of the big heavy hitters that we see in today's society, at least here in America, is gluten and dairy. Both of those are very highly processed here, and there's a lot of other associations that's making them very inflammatory within the body, other than just being gluten and just being dairy. So I would have people take some kind of anti-inflammatory type diet, even if it's just for a few months, just so that they can start getting in the right direction with their health. And then the second thing is just finding a movement practice that feels good for them. It doesn't have to be high intensity exercise at a gym. It doesn't have to be slow yoga or anything like that. Just find something that you enjoy and something that you can keep up with. Like for me, it's getting outside, it's rock climbing, it's hiking, it's backpacking, all sorts of stuff. That's what I love to do. And so when I'm doing that stuff, it doesn't feel like something that I have to do. It's more just something that I want to do. So if you can find some kind of movement practice that you want to do, it'll make getting or moving a lot more fun.
But I love that you incorporate the movement piece, because I think that we've gotten so far away from how important that is to move our bodies, even if we're not outside. You know, we're at the stage where, you know, we really have four seasons here in Washington, D.C., and I see a lot of my clients from November till March, they just don't want to go outside other than to get in their cars or walk their dog. They just don't want to be outside. And I'm finding the older that I get, the more benefit I get just from being outside and having the sun hit my face, getting out in nature, smelling the fresh air. All of those things are so important, because we kind of exist in these spaces now where we are in filtered air all day long, recirculated air. We're in our cars, we're in airplanes. And so I think it's so important. So I'm glad that you did mention that. That's really hugely beneficial for so many people. We don't do enough of it.
Yeah, and here people will talk about the hiking season, and I'm like, season? You can do it all year long. Why are you cutting it down to just one season? So just because the weather isn't, you know, blue skies and sunny all the time doesn't mean you still can't get outside and breathe the fresh air. And I actually think the fresh air, like, while it's raining, is way better for me than just the blue sky days. So
that's great, especially because in Washington that happens a lot.
Yep, you get used to it.
Yeah. So Brian, we really thank you for all of your information, expertise, and you know, we really wanted to talk to you about mold today because we knew that you were an expert in that field, but you also do a lot of other things to include movement. Can you please tell our listeners about some of the other offerings that you have, how they can work with you, and where they can go to find out more about you?
Yeah, so if people go to summitforwellness.com/EW podcast, then we'll have a full resource guide there for just mold exposure. And if you're, you know, worried that you might have been exposed to mold, different steps that you can do. But that will also put you on my website, and then you can see everything else that we have to offer. We also have our Summit for Wellness podcast, which Cynthia's been on before.
And I loved, by the way.
Yeah, that's actually one of our top downloaded episodes right
really?
Now, just so you know.
Oh,
yeah.
That's so awesome. I love, I so enjoy, we had such a great session, but you know, it's such topics that are so badly needed, people really need to hear. So that's wonderful. I'm glad to hear that.
Yep, I totally agree. It was an awesome conversation. So people can go over and listen to Cynthia over on that podcast.
Great. Well, again, we thank you for your time and all of your information. And we know that our listeners will definitely benefit from all that you've shared today.
Awesome. Thank you both so much for having me on.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for joining us. You can find out more about Cynthia and her work at chtwellness.com. And you can find out more about Kelly and her work at everydaytherapist.com. In addition, if you have questions for us or topics you'd like us to address, please email us at everydaywellnesspodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, be well.